Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Have you ever wandered the streets of New York late at night? In the summer, you might discover New Yorkers stationed under street lamps, reading a book or a newspaper in the cool park breeze. No Kindles or iPhones in sight. My next guest, Bill Hayes, is a lifelong insomniac and came across this New York City quirk on one of his many sleepless nights wandering the city. The city itself is featured in his latest book, where he writes about many quiet but also vibrant snapshots of life here in New York City. It's a multimedia memoir, and it's called Insomniac City, New York, Oliver, and Me. And Bill is here to tell us about some of these vignettes and his relationship with the Oliver of the title, who was Oliver Sacks. Welcome to WNYC. So nice of you to come.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we'll invite your beautiful and maybe even strange overnight encounters in New York City. 212-433-WNYC with your 4-in-the-morning experiences worth sharing. 212-433-9692. But can I start with you?
Yes.
And Oliver Sacks, who, of course, was the author and neurologist who died in 2015. You were very close. And maybe you want to tell us a little bit about your relationship with him and why he and your overnight insomniac stories are in the same book.
I first met Oliver when he wrote me a letter in 2008. So 8 years ago, when my last book came out called The Anatomist, I was living in San Francisco at the time, and he had read my book. And out of the blue, I get a letter from Oliver Sacks saying he'd read it and enjoyed it. And as I would later learn, whenever he read a book that he really loved, he would often write a letter to the author. So flattered and intrigued, I wrote a letter back, and we had a little correspondence.
There are many sweet moments between you and Oliver in the book that you write up as journal entries. There was a moment where you write about teaching Oliver to open a bottle of champagne. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. Well, you know, I moved to New York about a year later, moved here in spring of 2009, and Oliver and I fell in love and became partners. Falling in love, having a relationship, having a domestic life was new for Oliver. And he dove in headfirst, sometimes wearing his swimming goggles, which is what he insisted on doing when I taught him how to open a bottle of champagne on New Year's Eve, something he had never done before in his life in his 76 years at that time. So he thought, just to be safe, put on swimming goggles.
And let me read another short passage from a scene between you and Oliver. You write, "What is the opposite of a perfect storm? That is what this was, one of those rare moments when the world seems to shed all shyness and display every possible permutation of beauty." Oliver said it well as we took up our plates and began heading back downstairs. "I'm glad I'm not dead."
We enjoyed many nights on the rooftop of our building. We had a very civilized arrangement, keeping separate apartments in the same apartment building. And we had a great rooftop. And we would go up there and have dinners, have drinks, drink from a bottle of wine. And on this one particular night, it was more surpassingly beautiful than we could believe. And he just came out with this exclamation, which was very Oliver-esque: "I'm glad I'm not dead."
Was he an insomniac too? Did you wander the streets together?
He was indeed an insomniac too. This was one of many things we had in common and something we discovered in our original correspondence. But no, he didn't wander the streets at night like I did. If only because he was an older man, he was about 30 years older than me. He would toss and turn and maybe get up and read. But I would grab my camera sometimes and just go walk the streets of New York and see what I could discover.
And the book features a lot of life, like when you try to strike up a conversation with a taxi driver who thinks of himself as a psychiatrist, or when you try to help a blind man use the subway when he doesn't really need your help at all. But towards the end of the book, as you were writing, Oliver was dying. Did you consciously want to contextualize Oliver's death in this way?
You know, I didn't have a plan for the book when I set out to write it. I knew I wanted to write about my life in New York. I didn't even know at the outset how much or how I would write about my life with Oliver Sacks. But I had kept a journal since the very beginning of our relationship. In fact, the very first journal entry dated May 9th, 2009 is, O says I must keep a journal, and so I must. And I hadn't really kept a journal in my lifetime before, but I kept it carefully over the years. And when it came to sitting down and writing this book, I found really, honestly, to my amazement, I had 750 pages filled with stories about New Yorkers' encounters, but also about my life with Oliver Sacks.
Let's get some of these random overnight encounters onto the show. There's one in the book that you have with a fisherman coming from Battery Park.
Yeah, really delightful. In my first 4 years here in New York, I had a full-time job working for a nonprofit called IAVI. So I would take the subway to and from work every day. And one evening as I was going home on a crowded subway, here was a fisherman. And he sat down right next to me with three very tall poles. And as I say in the book, you can't be sitting next to a fisherman on the subway and not ask him, how was your day? Did you catch anything? And so I did. And he told me all about fishing in New York City, which was something I would never have known about.
Was he fishing for his own consumption?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. But also, and I think this is important, for his own pleasure. He enjoyed fishing. He found it peaceful. He loved to be out on the water. And it didn't matter if he got a fish or not.
There's a scene where you get a lesson from a skateboarder at the skateboard park on the West Side Highway. Mm-hmm. Was that in the middle of the night too?
That particular one was not in the middle of the night, but I love the sound of skateboarders on 8th Avenue, which we could hear from our apartment. Just the sound on the street is something I associate with pure freedom. So Oliver and I would sometimes take a walk to the skateboard park at Chelsea Piers, and the story you're thinking about is one where I get lessons in skateboarding 101 from a young man.
And did you ask him to do it, or did you watch? Did he watch you watching him and offer?
I think it was a little bit of both. You know, I'm someone who's very open to all different people, whether on the subway or in a taxi or on the streets. And I was genuinely curious because I'm way too afraid to attempt the kind of daredevil feats they were doing. I don't think I've even ever been on a skateboard, but I wanted to know what it's like and how you do it, and he taught me.
So, listeners, call in with your stories for our beautifully curious guest, Bill Hayes, who you can hear his curiosity and how it expresses itself, and he writes about it in his book, Insomniac City. We want to hear your beautiful and maybe strange nighttime encounters in New York. Give us a call and tell us your own 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning experience, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll continue with Bill Hayes right after this. WNYC with Bill Hayes, author of Insomniac City, New York, Oliver and Me, and Daniel and Me. You're on WNYC. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. You have a story.
Yeah, I've lived in New York for 16 years now, and I spent at least 10 of it working full-time in nightlife. And one of my favorite things to do, it's been years since I've been able to do this, but, you know, you'd leave a bar or a club at 4 in the morning, and I would go to the Fulton Fish Market and watch the fish being unloaded and tossed around. And once that started to die down, walk right around the corner up Wall Street to Federal Hall and watch the stock market start to come alive. And it was a really interesting juxtaposition of the, you know, working class, like, stinking, you know, fishmonger-type guys, and then the three-piece suits on Wall Street, and all of them kind of making the city what it was or what it is.
That's such a great story. Thank
Absolutely.
You for that.
Yeah.
You don't need television or the movies to get amazing entertainment, right?
It's so true.
And edifying entertainment that tells you something about life. Michael in Harrington Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Hi, just wanted to say this has to be my third time making it onto the air. I'm a really big fan, and I listen often. This is really exciting for me.
Glad you're back on.
So I could tell you about one of my greatest memories that happened ever in New York. I'm from New Jersey, but this definitely would not happen
if
I wasn't such an insomniac. Yes, that's my friend Tatiana on the line. She was also there. I just called her in so she could listen. We actually went to see Lady Gaga close out the Roseland Ballroom.
We took live for 12 hours.
Yes, we saw her close out Roseland Ballroom. And if we weren't such insomniacs, we may not have been able to meet her after the show. And it was probably one of the greatest moments of our lives. And we are best friends. And Brian, I just wanted to share that moment.
Well, I'm glad you did. As insomniacs, how long did you have to wait after the show to get to meet Lady Gaga?
Like 12 hours.
Tatiana, we must have been there for like at least 3 or 4 hours,
we must
right?
Have been
we
were there all for the entire day from 6 a.m. to like yeah, 7
p.m. We waited in line for the whole concert all day then and went to the show and then, you know, waited outside in the back into the night.
Oh my God, and she signed your magazine.
Yeah, it was truly amazing.
So this all proves there's an upside to insomnia. You know.
Yes, absolutely. We met our idol.
Absolutely.
I love the joint phone call. Michael and Tatiana, thank you both very much. That's so awesome. You came to New York pretty late in life,
mm-hmm.
right, Bill?
Mm-hmm. I did. I moved here at age 48. 8 years ago. I'd lived in San Francisco 25 years, lived my whole life on the West Coast. Of course, I'd visited New York before, but as I say in the book, visiting here and living here are two very different things. I came here after the sudden, unexpected death of a long-term partner. It was a very difficult time, and I came to a point where I realized I needed to start my life over. So I came here really to start fresh.
And that's how the book opens,
That's
too.
How the book opens. The book is sort of – the memoir is kind of bookended by these two very painful losses in my life, my first long-term partner, Steve, and then the loss of Oliver Sacks. But it's also a book filled with, I think, joy and discovery and about reinventing oneself, because I didn't come to New York necessarily to pursue a career like some people do. I came here to start over and start fresh. And New York kind of saved my life. And I found a certain kinship with fellow insomniacs late at night in New York City.
So what's something about New York that native New Yorkers might not be able to see that you, coming from San Francisco at age 48, might be able to see?
Well, one very simple example is in San Francisco, if I were to walk outside of my apartment at 3 in the morning, there would be no one on the streets. Even in the park nearby, there would be no one in the park.
Really? Even in a major place like San Francisco?
Not in the neighborhood where I was living, No. Whereas in New York, I go outside and it is, as you said, entertainment. But there are also all kinds of amazing acts of kindness and beauty that one can see. Just on my way to the studio this morning, I left my building to go to the subway. I found, sort of to my horror, that 8th Avenue was being torn up once again. There was street construction everywhere, machines and jackhammers. And where there had once been a crosswalk, it was now just filled with machinery. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw a construction worker put down his jackhammer and help a blind man to cross the street. Because where there had been a crosswalk, there was just mounds of asphalt. And it was the simplest thing. You know, he just helped him across the street. That was it. He didn't walk him home. But there was something so lovely about it. The man had a white cane, and he helped him across, and that was it.
Dripping concrete dust onto the cane. Max in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Max.
Hi, Brian. Sorry, I'm really excited to be on the show. I listen every day. So my story is I am a terrible, terrible insomniac. I have to take Benadryl all the time to fall asleep. And one day I was on sort of an exercise kick, and it was about like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was at my partner's apartment in Lower Manhattan, and I figured, oh, I'll just go for a run at 4 in the morning.
Oh,
so
boy.
I jogged
on Benadryl
from Fulton Street. I jogged from Fulton Street down to the Seaport, all the way over through Battery Park up to about Houston and back, circling back all the way to Midway. On the Brooklyn Bridge. It was like 6 miles or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the moral of the story is it was so peaceful and wonderful. But
I had to walk with a cane because my legs hurt so bad for about 2 days after.
Max, thank you. Great story. Michael on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. You have a question for our guest, right?
Yes, I do. I've been out late night, too, and over the years I've noticed that I felt safe during certain years, and then gradually, recently, I haven't felt as safe as I used to. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you guest ever encountered a dangerous situation late at night.
I haven't really, not that I recall. I guess I have acquired enough New York street smarts to stay out of what might be dangerous situations. So I've had to acquire that quickly.
That is what a lot of people might think of first. Yeah. Oh, it's dangerous to be out in the middle of the night on the streets of New York.
But not necessarily. As other callers have said, it can also be very peaceful and sweet-tempered. One of the loveliest surprises in my first summer in New York was walking through parks in the middle of the night and finding people reading under street lamps, reading books, reading poetry, or just getting out of their hot, hot apartments to be in the coolness of a park in the middle of the night.
But I think Mary Ellen in Harlem might have a different take on that. Mary Ellen, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello. I love your show. Yes, I'm listening and feeling envy and aggravation because walking around at night is absolutely not something women can mm-hmm. do in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I'm a therapist, I have many patients who have insomnia, mm-hmm. would like nothing more than to go out and stretch their legs, see these great things. Not possible. Not a good idea.
I think that's a good
point.
Any
suggestions?
Well, one way to sort of escape into another world, because I have had trouble sleeping my whole life, and in fact, my first book is called Sleep Demons. It's a memoir about insomnia. One of my recommendations is don't toss and turn in bed. Get out of bed.
They know that, yeah.
Curl up with a good book,
yes.
Something that may relax you.
Yeah, all of the above people try, but it's nothing like walking around the city at night, not open to women.
Yeah, good point.
A fair point about male privilege. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Susie in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susie.
Well, I do go out at night in the city carefully, and I've had a very, really magical experience a number of years ago. I was studying flamenco dancing, and one of the things that one learns when one's doing flamenco, although it's less directly related, is how to play castanets. And I was coming home very late at night, at 3 o'clock in the morning, from a flamenco performance, actually, and I was standing on the Bleecker Street subway platform by myself. And I thought, well, I'm alone. I could practice my castanets, which is peripherally related. So I was practicing castanets for a dance, a southern Spanish dance called the Sevillanas. And I was practicing them on the subway platform, and all of a sudden I hear this hooting noise. And I couldn't figure out where it's coming from, this hooting and hollering, and I look up the tube, and there's this man coming running down the tracks. In, I think, sort of an orange jumpsuit. You know, he had been working on the tracks. And he comes hooting and hollering in Spanish, jumps up on the platform and says, "You know Sevillanas. Ever since I came to New York, I haven't met anyone else who knows how to do Sevillanas. You have to dance them with me right now."
That is great.
And I found myself at 3 o'clock in the morning on the Bleecker Street subway platform dancing this southern Spanish folk dance with this gentleman who had come from Spain and had been working on the tracks in the middle of the night.
What a
story.
That
is a really beautiful story.
And it was so much fun, and it was just such a magical thing. And it was so, in some ways, it was so New York, you know?
And for me, so believable, because I have encountered images and stories just like that. That's wonderful.
Thank you very much, Susie. That's great. So do you feel like a real New Yorker now after 8 years?
I think I do. Yes, I absolutely do. There's still a part of me that's a West Coaster. You know, I grew up in Washington State, so I still have that in me. And I think that is part of what appealed to Oliver Sacks, my partner. There were many things about us that were very different. He was very English. I was very, you know, American and sort of Washington State. But there were things about us that were very much alike. I think we were both very open to experience, very interested in our fellow human beings, and, of course, in writing and reading. And
we just have a minute left. Mm-hmm. One other thing about the book is that you include photographs of some of the people you encounter.
Right.
And I see that you have a book of your street photography coming next year.
Yeah.
How do you find people react to that idea these days? Are they resistant, like their privacy is being invaded, or into it because everybody has a phone and it's so regular now, or what?
Well, it's mixed. I did start taking photographs when I moved to New York, had a digital camera, and street photography was what I wanted to do. I always ask permission, so I try to be respectful of people. I ask if I may take their picture, and I get plenty of no's, but I get a surprising number of yeses. And in those brief encounters, something very intimate and beautiful can happen.
With stories about himself, stories about encounters and photographs of all kinds of New Yorkers, and stories about Oliver Sacks, the new book by Bill Hayes, Insomniac City, New York, Oliver and Me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.